105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another BizConnect radio show this sunny Monday afternoon. As always, we have two super guests in the studio with us today, and why don't we start by asking them to introduce themselves. So, to my right, we have...
John Mills. I'm the owner of the Foundry Brew Pub in Canterbury, so I'm the brewer and distiller, Canterbury Brewers and Distillers.
Fantastic. Thanks, John. And to my left...
Hi, I'm Paul Turner. I'm the Chief Finance Officer at the Marlow Theatre.
Fantastic. Paul, lovely to have you with us today as well. So, for those of you tuned in today to the show, hopefully you're interested in all things food and drink and live entertainment, because that's what today's show is going to be all about. So, do stay with us for the next hour. We're going to play a little bit of music, and when we come back, we're going to have a chat with John. So, join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the BizConnect, a radio show today. As we said before the music, we've got two super guests in the studio with us today. We have John Mills, who is the founder of Canterbury Brewers and Distillers and the Foundry Brew Pub in Canterbury. And we also have Paul Turner with us, who is the Chief Finance Officer from the Marlow Theatre. Gentlemen, welcome to the studio today.
Hi. Morning. Thanks for having us.
Lovely to have you with us today. John, if we could start with you, please. And just by way of an introduction, tell us all about your multifaceted brewing, distilling and hospitality business based in Canterbury City Centre, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so we're just off the High Street. We're a 120-seater restaurant, but we're fairly unusual in that we brew and distill in the back of the restaurant as well. So as well as providing food, we also provide 14 beers, two ciders and 9 spirits, all made on site.
That is incredible. So just paint a picture for us. I'm assuming it's a fairly kind of crowded operation in there. You've got a 120 seat restaurant, and somehow you've managed to squeeze all of this kind of brewing and distilling in there as well. So how is that even possible?
It's actually it's very airy, as it happens. It's a very big space. It used to be a Victorian foundry. So it's a very, very big space, so lots of room. Mm. But the breweries and distillery is not that big, no. So we have to be very, very, very tidy. Run it like a trade kitchen, if you like. So it's spotlessly clean all of the time. It's the only way you can run an operation like that.
Fantastic. Now, I believe you also run the business with your wife, Jodie. So... tell us about that and in terms of that dynamic and how that actually works. I mean, how do you divide the kind of the day-to-day responsibilities, John? How does that actually work in practice?
I'm a very, very lucky man. Jodie's amazing. She puts up with me. I mean, we're very, very busy. We've always worked really well as a team. We have 5 children, so just leaving the house... it's like a military operation. It doesn't look like it. It looks like chaos, and it is chaos to a degree. So, as I said, we are a fabulous team working together. Jodie tends to deal with the marketing and social media and developing the business, you know, where to go forward. I'm brewing and distilling. We have a fabulous team. And they're looking after the kitchen and the restaurant and making sure everyone's looked after.
Fantastic, yeah. So your passion, presumably, is in brewing and distilling. So tell us about your journey. I mean, how did you become somebody that you know, ultimately is able to brew their own beer? Did it start off as a hobby? I remember when I was at school in my sort of late teens, all of my mates decided we were going to start brewing our own beer, you know, and airing cupboards at home were taken over with homebrew and stuff like that. Is that how it kind of started out for you, John?
Yeah, a bit like that. More like my father's hobby, really. So my parents in the early 70s, decided to buy an old cattle shed with no roof, so stone building. We lived in a caravan, and They grew everything and that you could possibly imagine. If you've ever seen A Good Life, that's my parents. So we grew up with my chores, cutting logs, planting stuff, picking stuff. But everything that we grew, my father would turn into alcohol. We were a long way from the shops. So at 7 year old, I would be bottling his homebrew. Probably be illegal these days for a 7 year old to do that. So I kind of like grew up with that knowledge. Both my parents cooked and were cooking with fresh produce that I'd picked, if you like. So looking back, it's kind of like natural. I became a chef. So I traveled all over as a chef. And ended up in hospitality, run restaurants, run hotels. But I'd always been homebrewing at home and had that as a passion. So 14 years ago, I decided to bring that together and looked to train as a brewer. And then we opened up our old site at the Foundry and with two beers, and we've progressed since then.
Gosh. And, I mean, you know, that's obviously quite a big leap. You know, how easy was that process in terms of, you know, having decided that you wanted to, you know, brew beer for a living, to then kind of setting up your own kind of brewing operation and your own micro pub, in Canterbury? You know, how easy was it to kind of follow your dream, if you like, in that respect?
I'd love to tell you that I had this amazing business plan and, this was all, you know, excelled out on in a budget, but to be honest, I just went ahead and purchased a small brewery, put it in the back of a pub, you know, plumbed it all in ourselves. We've been doing hospitality for a long time, so you know, we knew we'd have a good operation, good food, great staff, and we've evolved. So started with two beers, then three. We were very real ale focused at the time, and then thought, oh, well, we'll try one of these new craft beers, and that went well. Then we did a lager, and then we did a cider. You know, 14 years later, or 12 years later, we're 14 beers and 9 spirits down the road, and we're at the moment making several whiskies, just to take it another step further.
And I guess... in many ways, you know, you've been fortunate in that, you know, micro pubs, real ales, craft beers, all of those things have become very sort of quite fashionable, haven't they? And quite kind of trendy in many ways. People have sort of, many people have sort of been attracted to that. And I guess it's created a whole new market. So has that been, you know, quite important for you as well, do you think, in terms of being able to be a success?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it certainly started off as kind of like the real ale explosion, and us finding our love for good quality beer again in this country. And then indeed the craft beer explosion sort of came over from the States. And so, yeah, it was very good timing. I was very aware of that explosion in the United States. I actually went over 5 times to see what they were doing and learnt a lot from that. And indeed, I think we're going to be hit with an explosion in craft distilling over the next sort of 5 years.
Yeah.
I think we're at the beginning of that. So we were at the beginning of all of them. And there was a plan there. I was aware of what was going on.
What do we actually mean by, you know, craft brewing, craft distilling? You know, what does that actually mean to people listening today? What are we talking about there, John?
It's really interesting. So in America, they've actually, you know, it means something. And it is a rule, if you like. And it means that you're an independent operator and you're below a certain size, a production size. Obviously in America that production size is massive compared to us. In this country we've kind of like borrowed that terminology but not really nailed down what it means. So a craft beer could be produced by the biggest producer in the world, or it could be produced, you know, by the smallest producer. And I think the general public, you know, they see that as an independent small local producer, and I think we've fallen in love with that over the last few years, whether that be cheese or salami or, you know, whatever. And I think that's a really good thing, knowing who's making your food and knowing what it's made from. I think we're really beginning to value that in this country, and that's a really good healthy thing.
And Paul, you're very committed to that at the Marlow, aren't you, as well, in terms of supply chain on your kind of food and beverage operations? You like to work with local suppliers across the board, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So our front of house trading operation, 80% of ours is everything purchased local, and obviously there's large manufactured products in that as well, but we make sure that we are actually purchasing them from local suppliers. So that's something we're really proud of, and you know, hopefully in the near future we're looking at working with John as well, once stuff at the Marlow as well. And yeah, it's really, really important to us, because we, as the Marlow, we know the importance of us for the city, but also for the region, and we think it's really important to keep that money as local as we can possibly to create jobs and everything in Kent. That's what
fantastic.
We think.
Good. Well, look, guys, I think what we're going to do, we're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, John, I'd like to understand a bit more detail about what a day out or what the kind of the Foundry Brew Pub experience actually looks like, and why people should seriously consider popping along. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the BizConnect radio show today. We're talking with John Mills, who is the founder of Canterbury Brewers and Distillers and the Foundry Brew Pub in Canterbury, and also Paul Turner, who is the Chief Finance Officer from the Marlow Theatre. They're both in the studio with us today. John, I'd like to follow on from where we left off in the first part of the show, if we can. Just describe for us the experience of coming to your Foundry Brew Pub in Canterbury. What is it you want customers to experience? What feelings do you want them to take away afterwards, having visited your pub?
So we're an old Victorian foundry, the actual building. So it's a beautiful brick Victorian building that you come into. Lots of space. You get welcome, sat at a table, and we do table service, so you get served to the table, and you get a beer menu. So you get a huge selection of beers, from lager to Belgian beers to fruit beers, real ales. So you can choose from any of these, and the staff are all our fabulous team, and they can explain to you what the beers are. You can have a taster tray that we made ourselves out of whiskey staves. So you can have 5/3 of a pint of all different beers and get to taste the different ones. So you're immediately having like an experience. I mean, that actual product, the taster tray, we sell more of those than any other individual product. And like, you think it would be burger, or you think it would be lager, but it's actually taster trays are our biggest selling individual product. So people really, really, really take to that. We serve fantastic food. We've got an amazing kitchen team. And you can also then take the experience a bit further if you wanted. You could have a brewery tour, which we do open to the public on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. Come and experience the brewing. But even if you don't do that, whilst you're sitting there, we'll well be brewing in the background behind a glass window, and they might be carrying a cask or two past your table. So it's actually a working brewery and distillery whilst you're sitting in the middle of it.
Fantastic. And so what I'm hearing, you don't have to be a kind of a beer buff or a beer nut, for want of a better word. Presumably you offer, glasses of wine as well. It's just a general kind of nice ambiance. It's a nice setting, and it's just a nice place to come out and socialise, presumably.
Absolutely. I'm a true believer in not getting too tied up with things and, being a beer snob, if you like, and telling people on how they should drink their whiskey or drink their beer. You know, we're ultimately hosts. We're here to give people a great time, and that's why we produce so many things. If we made cheese, we'd make the most approachable cheddar cheese, and then we'd have every selection all the way up to the most stinkiest blue cheese. You're not meant to like every beer that we make, but we hope you walk away loving something that we make. So that's why we sort of diversified into spirits as well. It's why we do vodka, we do gins, we do rums, we do moonshine, we do English whiskey. So as many people as possible on that family table can get involved in the experience. So dad might only drink lager, the brother-in-law might only drink real ale, Mum might be having a gin and tonic. Nan might be on the moonshine, you know. we want people to really... And of course, we have a fabulous wine selection, including Kent wine, which I find very exciting, is exploding all around us. Mm. And you can have a cup of tea, that's fine.
Yeah, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about the kind of distilling side of the business, because I know that's more recent, that's the more recent addition, and I think you've just recently added whiskey to that as well. So just tell us about that. Was that, from your point of view, was that a kind of a natural extension of the kind of the brewing operation? Was it just a natural thing to go into distilling as well, because obviously they're fundamentally quite different processes, aren't they, and they need a whole new set of kind of machinery in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely natural progression in my head anyway, because I'm actually making the products. We did this fabulous range of beers, and which was natural progression, and we get to 14 eventually. For me moving into distilling, if you imagine that you're making vodka, well, you have to make alcohol first before you distill it into a higher alcohol. So we actually make beer, and then we distill the beer all the way to 96% to make vodka, or we make beer and we distill it only to 60% to make whiskey. So slightly simplistic, but you get the idea. So we actually own half of the kit already, in the brewery. So for us, yeah, it was really a natural progression, but it's an extension of my passion. I needed to do something else, and also think making the outlet more diverse, you know, appealing to lots of different people.
Yeah. So how many different varieties do you now make as well in terms of gin and whiskey? For example, you mentioned moonshine.
So what makes us extremely rare as a distillery in the country is that we make our products from scratch. So 400 odd gin makers in the country, less than sort of 25, 30 actually make it from ingredient all the way. So we're actually licensed to make the alcohol on site. So
yeah, because a lot of people don't realise that, do they necessarily, that quite often the kind of the base alcohol is actually bought in a massive kind of vat, isn't it?
Yeah, for the gin, yes, absolutely. So we use our highest quality brewing barley to make our vodka, and then we make our gin from our vodka, which makes us pretty rare in the UK. Mm. Our rums, we make three rums to make rum from scratch, from sugarcane all the way through to end product. It's rarer than hen's teeth in the UK. Moonshine's pretty unusual. Mm. And then English whiskey.
Is moonshine more sort of potato-based? Have I on the wrong tangent there completely?
Slightly wrong tangent.
Right, okay.
In the sense it was illegal. So what made it famous was the Americans making illegal whiskey during Prohibition. And then, you know, made famous by Bo and Duke driving around in a fast car sort of thing. So that was American whiskey.
Yes. I'm getting confused with my Irish roots, which would be poutine, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the poutine, which is also illegal, and that's that's the connection. Yeah.
Fantastic, good. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about something you mentioned in the first part of the show, which was how you grew up. In many ways, living off the land, I think it's fair to say, in terms of your family and how you lived. And that I think, has kind of fed through, hasn't it, into everything, your ethos, if you like, as a business, and everything that you're all about. Because I know sustainability is at the heart of everything you do as well, John. So just tell us a little bit about the importance of that in your business, if you can, please.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that to me just seems natural thinking, because as you say, you know, I kind of like grew up with that. And when you grow up in the country, you have to build things and make things. And so all of our brewing heat, so all of the heat from the brewery when we're boiling, we capture all of that heat and we heat hot water up, and then we use that to brew the next day. So we've been doing that since the beginning, and most brewers do that, in fairness. With the distilling, we've now only recently, 3 weeks ago, completed a project where we've insulated the whole of the restaurant, the ceiling, the wall, for obvious reasons, But we're now capturing the heat from the distillation process and pumping it into the two rooms. Our own design, we built it ourselves, took a few ideas from heating big farm buildings. And we're also capturing any spare waste heat and turning that into hot water to indeed distill with the next day. So that's, we're really incredible. Proud of that project.
So that's a heat exchanger system that you've kind of installed there, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, two heat exchangers. So we've got one which is like a coil fan heater. The hot water that's being produced, we have a fan literally blowing that heat into the restaurant for heating, and then we have a heat exchanger where we're capturing the hot water for brewing the next day.
Fantastic. Well, look, John, sadly we've come to the end of our interview today. Just give us a shout out, if you can, please, for your website, how people can find out more about your operation. I know you're just off the high street in Canterbury, but presumably you have a website with all of this information on it. And also, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out there that have been inspired by your business journey and what you're all about. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, John?
Yes, so Canterbury Brewers and Distillers, just go to the website and you can book a table, you can buy something on the shop. And indeed, we've just released our very first English whiskey, which will be available in the shop in a couple of weeks' time.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your journey with us.
Pleasure.
Do stay with us. We're going to play a little bit of music. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Paul Turner from the Marlowe Theatre. So join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the second half of the Biz Connect radio show today, everybody. We've been talking with John Mills, founder of Canterbury Brewers and Distillers and the Foundry Brew Pub in Canterbury. And now we're going to have a chat with Paul Turner, who is the Chief Finance Officer at the Marlowe Theatre, also in Canterbury. Paul, lovely to have you with us again on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Time passes so quickly. I think you were on about 6 months ago telling us all about the exciting things going on at the Marlowe. But for the benefit of everybody listening, bring us bang up to date in terms of what you guys have got programmed for this year, if you wouldn't mind, because I know there's a lot of new shows, a lot of exciting stuff happening again.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a wonderful year, to be honest, and our audiences are well behind the theatre, which is excellent to see. But we've got an exciting season coming up. We're just going into a period of with a play of Inspector Calls, and then Buddy the Musical, which has been going for years and still really, really strong. It's actually going to sell out for us again.
That's Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly, So It's really, really encouraging for that.
Yeah.
But we've also got some of our great stuff coming in the year. We've got some brilliant one nights with our comedy, obviously, but things like Anton DeBeck and also Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which is a massive brand new production of that show. Unlike the one that was in the West End quite a few years ago, it's got a lot of the original sound music from the original film that we all knew. And when they made it originally, the West End only had one song.
Right.
So it's really exciting to have that. We've got that for a couple of weeks.
Will you be handing out Wonka bars and golden tickets on
I'm sure,
performance?
I'm sure somebody somewhere will be making something like that in our marketing team for us to sell out. To get everybody in. Yeah. And then we go on to things like Sister Act, which is another great production, and a new production, which is actually coming from America originally with a great producer called Tom DeKaiser, who's brought quite a lot of stuff to the theatre recently. He's brought in Fisherman's Friends and the Cher Show last year, which is Winnie the Pooh, which is a little bit different, and it's a small musical using Winnie the Pooh puppets, which is something that we've never had in Canterbury before. But then actually this week we go on sale with a brand new brochure, so that's landing on people's doorsteps as we speak now, and there's some exciting stuff coming later in the year. So there's a brilliant play that's in the West End at the moment called 222, a ghost story. We're having that coming to Canterbury. And also there's a return of Dirty Dancing later in the year and the Rocky Horror Show. And then we go into next year with the just after our brilliant panto this year, Aladdin. Just after that, we're going to have Peace Pan That Goes Wrong and the huge West End production of The Wizard of Oz, which is opening in the Palladium very soon.
Fantastic. Gosh. And all that in one sentence. Yeah. I'm impressed. And now, something that caught my eye was Life of Pi. that I think is escaped your shout out there.
That's in the late summer, early autumn, I believe. That one is selling really well for us. It's obviously a great family title as well, and we're really excited to have that. I know it's selling well because we actually added another performance into it. So it's great. It's also currently being shown in cinemas as well. So what I want to really encourage people to do actually come to us and watch it in real life as well. It's a great adaptation, brilliant puppetry show.
I was going to say, how is the production going to be brought to life on that? Like Warhorse, for example, coming to the theatre, and that is all puppetry, which is incredibly lifelike.
Yeah.
Is it the same kind of thing with the tiger, for example?
Yeah, the tiger is that exact concept multiple puppeteers handling the tiger, basically,
amazing.
On stage. Yeah.
So
yeah. We haven't got real tigers, production. Don't worry.
No. Brilliant. Now, you're also obviously incredibly well known for your panto productions around Christmas, and so tell us what I mean, thinking ahead, obviously we can't I've already mentioned it, the C word, but I won't mention it again, but thinking ahead, what panto are we going to be talking about later on this year?
So we're already on sale with Aladdin, which our audiences after this year's Sleeping Beauty were absolutely running to the tills to come and buy more tickets to come back this year. So I'm really pleased that we're 50% over 50% full already for this coming year, which is great. It allows us also to prepare even more for the panto and gives us more confidence in casting as well, and actually looking at that even more in advance to say actually we know it's going to really sell really really well. So we're confident in that. We work incredibly well with Evolution Productions because we co-produce this pantomime in Canterbury, and they're a Kent-based producer, which is really important to us, and it's their theatre as well. It's really important that they really buy into our theatre as well, and we're really excited. And of course, it's got to the point now with our pantomime is that, and we don't sit on our laurels or anything like that whatsoever. We work incredibly hard at pantomime because it's really important, because it's so many people's first ever experiences into theatre, and the new audiences, and it might only actually be some people's only visit to theatre for a whole year. I'm incredibly lucky to work in this industry, so I see a lot of theatre, and I know you come a lot as well.
Yeah.
But you know, it's really important that we make that a really good family experience for everybody. So it's going to go really, really well. So we've sold over 45,000 tickets.
Already. Need to get in quickly.
We've got 45,000 left, so get yourself in there quick.
Yeah, but half sold already.
That's incredible.
Yeah. We're only in March, so
unbelievable.
So, and you're up for some awards, I believe, aren't you? Through the panto work over the years.
Yeah, so for the panto, so we're current reigning champions of panto of the year with Sleeping Beauty, but this year, our brilliant Dame Ben Roddy is up for Dame of the Year this year with the Panto Awards. We're back up for Panto of the Year as well, and then also our director Paul Hendy, who also writes it, and is him and his wife Emily own Evolution Productions as well. He's up for Best Director, and then rather a strange one, Carrie Hope Fletcher, who was our villain this year, and she played Carrie Boss. See what they did there, can't you? She's up for Best Newcomer. Of course, she's not a Best Newcomer in theatre, because she's a star. We all know that about Carrie. She's absolutely amazing. But it was her first ever pantomime, and it was lovely just to see how much she threw herself into that performance, actually. And also to be a villain, because, Carrie's Cinderella. She's, in Les Mis, she's playing all these great characters, but never a villain on a stage. So she really wanted to be a villain, and she was brilliant, but so not a villain off stage. She was absolutely beautiful to have in our building. She was great fun.
Fantastic. Brilliant. So lots of really exciting productions. You mentioned, obviously, Comedy Nights as well, live at the Marlowe, which I always love coming to. They're always a real showcase for the current kind of comedy talent that's out there, which is brilliant. But how else have you guys been investing in the kind of the theatre experience, if you like, for the theatre goer this year? Because I came along a couple of weeks ago to an event, and I was quite impressed with some of the sort of the screens, the new screens that you had up. So where's your focus been?
So we've had quite a large capital investment focus this year, certainly through my team, because IT comes under me, but also we are looking at investing on our stages as well. So we're looking at that in multiple ways. So you're right, the building's been open for 12 years now this year. So we need to start reinvesting back into that. So we have reinvested into all our digital screens and actually gone for new technologies as well, which is also greener technologies as well, because of course they were 12 years old and they're you know, starting to tire, and but energy efficiency is a lot better on these new screens. So we've got a massive video wall in that foyer now, and some stuff above our doors, and we've got some digital screens coming onto our windows actually as well, which are all coming in within the next month. So there'll be, instead of plastic vinyls being put up, there'll be digital screens which will always be up to date to tell people what's on tonight. But then also that whole green stuff as well, talking about in that area there, that's where we're also investing into our theatre as well. So looking at LED lightings around the building, because you know, it wasn't available at the time for our type of building. So in our auditorium and actually in our foyer area as well. And then the biggest thing we're doing on to do with sustainability this year, I suppose, really is our own production of a show called Trials, which was originally done in the Donmar warehouse, where it's going to be quite fun actually. So there's over 1,000 young people across Kent that are auditioning to be in this production, which will be made by us and directed by us as well, where these kids are basically on a jury, and then there's three different characters that are basically being judged and juried on their impacts on the environment of what they've done. And there's three different people, and the kids make the decision to do that. So it's going to be quite fun to do that. That's all tying in with a whole season with us as well. So one of the reasons why we're looking at ourselves as an organisation about that energy usage, because you know the energy crisis makes you think again, to be totally honest.
Yeah, and I'm sure your bills have gone through the roof as well.
They're quite big.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, look, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that kind of outreach programme that you have, and you know, within that the Marlowe Kit project that's kind of that you're working on at the moment, but also some of the programs that are out there for businesses to get involved with as well, Paul. So do stay with us. We're going to play a little bit of music, and when we come back we'll carry on the conversation with Paul. Join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. We're talking with Paul Turner, who is the Chief Finance Officer at the Marlowe Theatre, all about the exciting lineup of shows for the rest of this year and into next year. But Paul, what I'd like to do now, if we can, is again pick up on something that you mentioned in the first part of the interview, which is about your vision, really, to become Kent's engine house for the performing arts, and in particular, what this means in terms of community engagement and outreach with schools and young people through the Marlowe Kit project. So just to explain what that's all about, if you can, please.
Yeah, so we see our position in Kent as being the largest performing arts centre in Kent, and because of that, that we feel that we should be doing the engagement work, and we invest heavily in that. So we've got an L&P team which are highly engaged in our local community and in schools across the whole of Kent, not just in Canterbury. There's stacks of schools, to be totally honest, that are engaged in this in different levels, whether that be from buying tickets to being a full-blown associate member of the associate scheme with us, which there's 22 of them who really work closely with the RSC. So we take Shakespeare into schools, and we help facilitate Shakespeare being taught in schools. So, and we do that with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Who better to do that? And then of course we bring the RSC into our building as well, and that's coming up very soon with Julius Caesar, and we'll be doing that. And we engage in the schools heavily again to make sure that they are coming, to make sure that they're giving the kids the opportunity to see, you know, a great production of Julius Caesar in our building. So we see it's really, really important. So it's not just about coming to see shows, it's about giving young people skills and being the next generation of theatre makers. It doesn't have to be, they don't have to be performers, they can get a love of actually making theatre as well. So we do that through our youth theatre engagements as well.
And working in theatre, I guess, because it's not just, as you say, about the production side. You know, you yourself are an accountant.
Yeah.
You have marketing people, you have technicians, and you actually have quite a few job vacancies at the moment, I think, you're advertising
for. We do, but one of the key things that we do with our community is that we are we partner with East Kent College, so we take all of our work experience placements from one place, which is East Kent College. We had 22 of them last year that come in, and yes, people come from their accountancy courses and sat with my team and work with my team, but we've had people on the stage, we've had people in our hospitality section, we've had people with our L&P team across the whole business, really. So we talk about it as being a theatre, but you know, we do have you know, a huge amount of team. We've got HR departments as well, so you know, 235 staff already there. We've got the skills there that can actually give people the opportunity to come and learn from, you know, which I know is one of the best run businesses in Kent.
Yeah.
And what a better opportunity to do them. And actually, you know, there was a young girl that was in the finance team, a young girl called Brooke, come from East Kent College. She sat with my team. She had to do at least 65 hours. She ended up doing nearly 80 because she loved it so much. And it was all part of her coursework. And then, you know, she left, and not only did she have a valuable experience of actually working in finance, she left, and, you know, I was so pleased with her input that, you know, I was happy to put my name to her as a reference for her, because I knew that she'd go off and do it. And she's now working for Kent University, I believe it is now, that she's off working. So we love all them opportunities to really develop young people, not just in performing arts, but also an opportunity in any type of career development, really. Mm-hmm. And we need to do that because we need our next workforce. You know, it's a really difficult market to actually recruit people at the moment for any type of role. We're quite lucky being in Kent. People are prepared to move to Kent. But it's really difficult to recruit, and we need to get that next generation of workers and create them workers ourselves. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, with the school's engagement, is our next audiences, where they're going to come from. And if we don't get that lifelong love of theatre at a very early age, and with it not being on the curriculum so much anymore now, and many schools not even doing performing arts whatsoever, you know, it's even tougher for us. So yeah, there's loads of engagement work that we do, East Kent College, and then our own L&P team that are out there doing amazing stuff, including that work I was talking about, the trials. Our team are running out with 1,000 kids getting the opportunity to audition for that piece as well.
Good. I'd like to kind of move the conversation towards your relevance for businesses now, if we can, because I know you have a business membership program. There are lots of different advertising opportunities and marketing opportunities to link with the theatre. So just give us an overview of the business membership scheme, if you can,
Paul. Yeah, so there's multiple ways that you can engage with us, as you say. So, you know, the first level is actually becoming a business member, which gives you the great opportunity for a real small price to give your staff benefits. So if you're feeling that you want to be brand associated with us in any way, that's the starting point. So it's from £450 per annum if you're a small size company, and with that your staff get discounts as well, and also get the opportunity to come to special events around that as well, and invited to our networking events as well. So it's a real good brand association. And then you might find actually that you know whatever business you're in that you want to be associated with as well, so you can go up to the next level, or you might be interested in sponsoring a season or something like that as well, or a pantomime, or even just as simple as program advertising, to be honest. You know, it's an opportunity to grow with us as well. You know, programs at pantomime, people go in them, you know, we sell 10,000 of them. It's a really reasonable priced opportunity to engage with the theatre audience.
Yeah, and you mentioned the new theatre foyer screens that you've installed, obviously, this year as well, which really do look fantastic and really have a high impact. Okay, fantastic. And I know you do a lot of business networking as well with Matt and Eleanor at the team, and the team. We don't know when the next one is, but you had one a couple of weeks ago that I came to.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Which was really well attended.
It was really well attended. Yeah. I mean, Matt and the team worked really hard on pulling them together and you know, just widening out. And it's not just people that are business partners with us. It is advertised for people to, you know, come along and buy. And it's a great opportunity to, you know, I speak regularly to different suppliers that we could potentially speak to about anything from you know, IT software to you know, to beer suppliers, you know. It could be any of them type of people that are there all together. Yeah. And it's really interesting, and it's great. The fact is that so many of them are small independent businesses that attend them events as well. You're not really getting, you know, the big hitters are not coming out to them type events. No. They're, it is real local businesses. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's great. It's great to be involved in them ones as well.
And I think a lot of something that's often overlooked at the theatre is the quality of that food and beverage operation. Because
yeah,
I remember
we've got a new kitchen team that are really delivering great stuff now out of there as well. And we're a lot fuller than what we were before. But you know, also, you know, the front of house departments, you know, we can't serve everybody. Your hands up before anybody says, I can never get a drink in here. 1200 people and you all want to be served in 25 minutes. It's really, really tough to do that.
Yeah.
25 minutes before the show you all turn up, and 15 minutes before, you know. So we've got a lot of bars, we have a lot of staff on there as well, and we try and get through it as quick as possible. But in this year, one of them new technological things that we're looking at, actually something my team are going to be leading on, is an e-ticket texting solution, which will come through and also allow people to pre-order their interval drinks on an app before they turn up, so they can do that from the comfort of their own armchair in the afternoon and then drink
Fantastic.
It at the interval.
Fantastic. So lots coming down the pipe, lots to look forward to in terms of new innovation and experience. Just give us a shout out, Paul, if you can, for the website where people can find out all the latest information about the shows that are coming up, the business support program that you've been talking about as well. What's the best place to find out about that?
The best place for us is definitely just marlowfitter.com or whack it in a Google. We always come out on top on that one.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Paul and John, for being with us today. On the show. It's been absolutely fascinating to talk to both of you. We have got Easter coming up for our next show date. Actually, I think that's Easter Monday, so we won't be here in 2 weeks' time, but we will be here in 4 weeks' time with another couple of fantastic studio guests. So thank you so much for tuning in today to the BizConnect radio show. We wish you a happy Easter, and we'll be back with you again very soon. Bye for now.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.